It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Up ahead, it's our conversation about America's farmlands rapidly disappearing. Join in on threats to farmland, on development, land use planning in your community, 800-642-1234. First, for more than a year, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes emphasized his middle-class roots and progressive record while running a Democratic primary campaign for U.S. Senate. Now that his top Democratic opponents have dropped out, his challenge will be winning over independent voters in a general election campaign against Republican Senator Ron Johnson. Rich Kramer has this report.
At the July Farm Technology Days exposition in Clark County, a handful of Democratic candidates worked the crowd, hoping to make inroads with rural Wisconsinites who typically lean Republican. At the State Democratic Party Rural Caucus tent, Mandela Barnes went one-on-one with dairy farmer Hans Breitenmoser of Merrill.
Well, can we talk policy for
a
minute?
We can talk. Let's go. Let's have at it.
They talked fuel prices, health care, trade policy, and campaign finance reform. Barnes told Breitenmoser change is slow in the Senate, in part because it's a millionaire's club. Barnes said he's a different kind of candidate.
And if we don't have people in office who understand our struggles, things will never change.
That was less than a month ago. A lot has changed since then. All of Barnes' top Democratic competitors dropped out of the race in late July and endorsed his campaign.
It really is unprecedented.
That's Jessica Taylor. She covers Senate and governor's races for the National Cook Political Report.
And I think it speaks to the fact that this is Democrats' number one incumbent in Ron Johnson that they are targeting.
In his own words, Barnes' journey from Milwaukee kid to running to be Wisconsin's first black U.S. senator is a very Wisconsin story.
I come from a working class household. My mother was a public school teacher for 30 years. My dad worked on an assembly line, third shift for 30 years.
Barnes has consistently leaned on his upbringing to add personal flair to liberal policies championed by progressive Democrats. He recalls his dad making catalytic converters in Oak Creek following the Clean Air Act of 1970 when talking about transitioning to renewable energy. After the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, Barnes talked about his mother's abortion during a debate.
She had a complicated pregnancy. Her health was at risk. She had to make the decision to end that pregnancy. But it was her decision to make. And that's a decision that any woman across this country should be able to make without interference from politicians.
Barnes, who is Wisconsin's first ever black lieutenant governor, says he started thinking about getting involved in politics in 2004. He says he was inspired while watching a Democratic National Convention speech by then-Illinois U.S. Senator Barack Obama.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely.
And so I thought about, you know, the things that, you know, I lived through in my life. They weren't the worst in the world, but they were still some things and some trying times that a lot of people shouldn't have to experience.
Barnes has shown an ambitious streak in politics. He won his first campaign for the legislature in 2012. 6 years later, he won a Democratic primary for lieutenant governor to join Tony Evers' successful ticket in the race for governor. Democratic State Representative Francesca Hong says she's worked closely with Barnes in the lieutenant governor's office on issues like climate change.
When you feel like you have an ally and sharing your platform and connecting with folks who don't always have an entryway to politics, him being really open to that helped me as a freshman legislator feel like, okay, I can keep pushing.
Barnes' progressive platform and major endorsements from liberal favorites like U.S. Senators Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders have served him well in the Democratic primary. But the Cook Report's Taylor says Barnes will need to build support in rural areas between now and the general election.
And so that's where I could think that he could do some work and maybe a populist message could appeal there. But Barnes has been the one that Republicans most wanted to run against.
The attacks have already begun, with Republicans painting Barnes as a radical liberal who is out of touch with average Wisconsinites. Barnes says he's ready for the onslaught and believes his middle-class message and grassroots enthusiasm will win the day November 8th. Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And now we dig into a new report from American Farmland Trust. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The report shows in vivid detail how America has lost thousands of acres of farmland and ranch land every day. And if that trend continues, another 18 million will be converted by 2040. It maps out several scenarios for the future of agricultural lands that is currently on this collision course with development. And the report, it poses key questions. What do you want the landscape of your community to look like in 2040? Do you want to see an abundance of healthy farmland or more big box stores and sprawling housing developments? What development choices reflect your values? Join in 800-642-1234. Two UW-Madison researchers worked on the mapping and the modeling from the Center for Sustainability and Global Environment. Jan O'Shea is a research scientist with the center. Jan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Yeah.
Good morning. And Tyler Lark is here as well, an assistant scientist. Tyler, welcome to you.
Thanks for having us, Kate.
Good morning. Tyler, let's start with you. After working so deeply on the data modeling for this report, what concerns you most about disappearing farmland?
Well, it's really a trend that we just continue to see. And so in this work, we looked at what's happened over the last two decades and used that to project out in the future. And it really shows that if development and sprawl continues at the same rate that we've seen, we're on track to continue losing millions of acres every few years. And that really puts a lot of pressure on our agricultural systems and our farmers that are already under threat of so many different stressors.
Right, because when you compare the land issues here, and you compare development over farmland to climate change, to invasive species, to crop disease, you know, how does this particular threat compare to other challenges that agriculture faces today?
Well, it's absolutely one of the largest ones. You know, land is this fundamental resource. Without it, we can't farm, we can't produce the food, the feed, the fiber, and fuel that we need to support a growing population and our economies and everything we do. So I think it's an underlying issue. And just as you mentioned, all the other things going on, economic stressors for small farms in particular, climate change, you know, we're experiencing severe droughts across the U.S. and the globe. We've seen increases in severe flooding throughout the Midwest in recent years. So farmers are already under a lot of stress. They're definitely risk saturated, and having this pressure, this continuous pressure of increased development is one more thing added to their plate.
Risk saturated. Jan, what are your greatest concerns regarding farmland conversion?
One of the big issues is if a farmland is converted to urban, that is very unlikely converted back to farmland. Mm-hmm. So that means if we converted several like acres nearby community farmland to urban, like residential buildings or parking lots, yeah, that would be like in the near future, it will maybe remain residential area for like a long time. So that means this is a big issue in reversible conversion from farmland to urban. So that's why we focus this very irreversible pressure that urban development will on the farmland.
Because
both globe.
There's no going back once you convert the land to something else. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, very likely it will not convert it back to farmland.
Mm. Tyler, you know, I think about expanding cities and my own, you know, suburbs here in Wisconsin before I think about the rural areas. And I'm wondering, where is most farmland being lost in the U.S. and here in Wisconsin as you look at the maps?
Well, across the U.S., it's where you'd think, as you say, it's these major metropolitan areas on the East and West Coast, you know, with large cities continuing to grow. But it's also the Midwest. We have large metro areas here. So Minneapolis, St. Paul, Milwaukee, Chicago, Indianapolis, and particularly here in the Midwest, as those cities grow, where does that new land come from? Well, we're right in the heart of the Corn Belt, right? So it's often our best lands that are getting paved over and developed. And so when we lose an acre of land to sprawl or development here in the Midwest and in Wisconsin in particular, it's some of our best land and some of our most productive resources that are going out the window.
And your mapping looked said Dane County, Waukesha, and St. Croix counties are considered to be the hardest hit regions for farmland conversion. What stands out in those places?
Well, those are, you know, our big economic hubs, our big population centers here in Wisconsin. So Madison, the Madison metro area, Milwaukee, and really the, I'd say the entire Southeast Wisconsin region, right? Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha, it's just continuing to grow. And then St. Croix County, that's right across the river from the Twin Cities. And so seeing that outward growth there, I think is driving a lot of that.
UW-Madison scientists with us at the Center for Sustainability and the Global Environment. Tyler Lark and Jan O'Shea contributed data mapping expertise on this new report from American Farmland Trust that shows how Americans are paving over agricultural land at a rapid pace. Join in on what you see as you drive through rural Wisconsin and you look around at farmland. What is being developed at the fringes of your city? What is in crop production? What is in grazing? What is up for sale? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This new report from American Farmland Trust says over the course of 15 years, ending in 2016, our country paved over, built up, or compromised 11 million acres of farmland and ranch land, an average of 2,000 acres a day. The report looks at what will happen if that keeps up to our food, to our climate, to the ag economy here in Wisconsin. Join in on what you're seeing in areas that were once farmed. It's 800-642-1234. We have a pair of UW-Madison scientists worked on the modeling development for the report called Farms Under Threat 2040. Jan O'Shea is with us, Tyler Lark from the Center for Sustainability and the Global Environment. Let's bring on a call now. Samantha is joining us from Whitehall. Samantha, hi. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. This is a really interesting topic. Anyway, I live in Whitehall, but I work in Arcadia and by styrene foam packing. That's where I work. And when I've seen the development, all this corn and all these, like, the fields there that were once, like, with deer and other wildlife and farmland was sold off, and now it's, like, apartments that cost, like, $1,000 a month. Plus, you pay all your utilities, but it was all this rich, you know, farmland behind there. And now it's all like rows and rows of apartments that some of them are already, you know, rented out, and some are still being, you know, done by a company in La Crosse. So I just wanted to say, how can we need housing for people so they can move in and live and work in the communities that such rural communities, but how do we make it so, you know, they don't take away the farmland either? Because I'm a fifth generation of a farm, you know, of having family on a farm in Centerville, with, you know, rural Gallsville, Centerville. So that's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Samantha, thank you so much for sharing your story and sharing the observations as you see these apartments rise up. And I want both of you to respond to Samantha. Jano, you first. What's coming up for you here?
It's pretty common. If we drive around the Madison area, we will see a lot of agriculture land converted to residential house recently, especially. So It's very common. So our research is trying to locate such areas based on the satellite observations and our modeling. So we are trying to see if this kind of area can be replaced by existing urban area that will save a lot of agricultural land for future generations, not future farmer generations, or for people who wants to be farmer. That's what I want to see.
Tyler, what do you want to see? You know, as Samantha shared what she sees on the road, her farming past, and how to strike that balance.
Well, she brought up a great point, right? We need housing. We need to house ourselves. We need that growth for increasing population. I think the real key is doing that in a smart way. And so smart growth is this concept that's out there that can help, you know, provide some guiding principles, essentially trying to embrace, you know, zoning and growth in a compact manner, right? So preserve as much of that valuable farmland, those valuable natural areas, preserve as much of that as we can, and then build a little bit more densely or more efficiently in a way that's not just sprawling out, you know, sprawling and huge, you know, large rural lots where people are mowing 5 acres of lawn every weekend, but doing it in a way that's a little bit more dense, a little bit more intelligently sited, and preserving that really valuable land source that we rely on for food and recreation and so much more.
The report says these clusters of homes along rural roads are one of the largest drivers of this conversion, because you're fragmenting, you're cutting up farmland. Why is this land, you know, considered to be a place where you would want to cluster homes right along those roads?
Well, I think all the reasons, you know, amenities is a big one, transportation mm-hmm. network. So as people think about where they want to live, they, you know, tend to want to live near other people, near other development, near services. And so we do see, you know, quite a bit of growth, current and projected, along major commuter corridors, areas where there's good access to services. And you also see a lot of this leapfrogging effect where, you know, kind of sprawling out from major metropolitan areas, you'll get this scattered low density residential development on the outskirts of these branches, almost like tentacles coming out from all the major cities.
And that led in the report to something called runaway sprawl and that what that scenario might look like. Can you give us a picture of that?
Yeah. So essentially, you know, right now we modeled and estimated, what if we continue on the current track? You know, if we stay at business as usual, what will things look like? And even that scenario is a little bit grim. We're going to continue to lose a lot of really valuable farmland in Wisconsin and across the nation. But we've also seen, right, in the last couple of years, a lot of changes come into play, particularly with the pandemic and this shift towards a lot of employees being able to work remotely and a desire for more open space and spread out living situations. And so if something like that, some sort of shifts to how we want to live and work and where we want to do that continue to develop, it's possible that the amount of land and farmland that we lose will be even greater than what we project in the business as usual. And that would really have some dire consequences for our agricultural communities and land use across the state.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with UW-Madison researchers Tyler Lark there, Jan O'Shea, about this new report called Farms Under Threat 2040. You can join in on the loss of farmland, what you see in your area, what your community is doing about it. 800-642-1234. Richard is joining us from Two Rivers. Richard, hi.
Yeah, morning. Thank you for having me on the air. I want to ask your guest speakers, is this all in vain? I mean, I just saw, I listened to a show on National Public Radio last week that was saying how the soil erosion is being depleted to the point where it's not really going to be farmable by 2035. And they're losing it at a high percentage. So what is the difference between trying to do what you're doing, and they're not going to be farmable farmland?
Richard, thank you. Tyler, can you field that?
Yeah, you bring up a good point, right? Our agricultural and our food production systems are stressed in a lot of dimensions. And I think, you know, we don't want to just throw our hands up in the air and give up at that. And so, you know, farmers and our agricultural agencies, you know, are working hard to try to improve conservation. The organizations that are working on farmland protection, so organizations like American Farmland Trust, who we partnered with on this research, are working on, you know, conservation agriculture, trying to help farmers, you know, implement regenerative practices, putting cover crops on their fields to help restore that soil health, keep that soil in place, reduce some of that erosion. I think they have to go hand in hand, right? We need to have a strong land basis available to produce the food that we need, both in our state and our nation and for the globe. But then we want to do it in a smart way. And so thinking about conservation agricultural approaches. And in many cases, those two things can go hand in hand, right? And so thinking about protecting our best agricultural lands that are highly productive and then also putting on some great conservation practices on those lands.
So many things have to come together and work together. So this report is called Farms Under Threat 2040, Choosing an Abundant Future, from the American Farmland Trust that works on protecting farmland. UW-Madison scientist Tyler Lark here, Jan O'Shea, led technical and development mapping and modeling to show really vividly how land is changing across our country and what that means for our food supply, what it means for climate change. Join in, 800-642-1234. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. America stands at a crossroads in a new report that maps out how farmland is being swallowed up by development. And the report from American Farmland Trust poses the question, are we going to sit back and watch farmland and ranchland disappear, eroding food security, rural communities, and environment? Or will we join together in a nationwide effort to secure an abundant future? Two scientists from UW-Madison's Center for Sustainability and the Global Environment worked on the report. Jan O'Shea is a research scientist and Tyler Lark, an assistant scientist, and they stay with us. Let's bring on another call. Rana is with us from Rice Lake. Rana, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What would you like to bring up?
About is this idea of vertical farming, but not in replacement for, you know, farming in good old terra firma here on Earth, but as an add-on to agriculture. So I'm wondering if either of your guests can speak to the idea of vertical farming and that becoming a sustainable part of agriculture. And I take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Rana, thank you. We got, a little bit of cut off at the front end of that, but essentially wanting to know about vertical farming. Jano, can you field that?
Actually, vertical farming is a little bit out of my expertise, but yeah, vertical farming is kind of maybe a good way to solve like farmland losses problem caused by urbanization. So I personally interested in like urban agriculture, but maybe that is a good way, a combination with vertical farming. I'm not quite sure. Mm-hmm. Tyler, do you have any more ideas about this one?
It's an interesting idea. It's an interesting topic. I do think there's a lot of challenges to it, and it's something that's probably farther off in our future as far as being more viable and widespread. Just the amount of resources that go into it are, you know, quite high. If you have to build a big structure and all the energy of transporting the nutrients and things of that matter, certainly there's big benefits if it's located in a urban area. So you're producing your food where it needs to go. But if we compare it to something like what Yanu was alluding to, like urban agriculture, where we're recultivating old abandoned lots, or in other cases, you know, these small, really diverse farms right on the edges of our cities, often that are supplying our farmers market, those types of small, you know, fruit and vegetable producing operations are often the ones that are greatest threat of development. And those are the ones that are often the most sustainable as far as supplying these, you know, fresh, nutrient-rich foods to our cities and where we need them.
What about farm operations that may be struggling financially and they may see the quick fix of selling land to pay off farm debt? And Wisconsin has led the nation in recent past, you know, in farm bankruptcies. What economic pressures to land use change do you see going on there, Tyler?
Well, one of the biggest sort of solutions to try to slow this development pressure is a healthy, economically viable farm and farm industry. And as you mentioned, you know, the ag industry has been through a lot recently. Crop prices have dropped in recent years. They've come back up a little bit now, but then farmers are facing other challenges like really high and expensive input prices. So the cost of fertilizers like tripled over the last year or two. And so there's just pressures coming from all over. The cost of land has skyrocketed. It's embodied a lot of the higher prices in the crops and the inputs and the equipment that goes into it. And so all that sort of means slim margins for the producers and a more challenging economic environment to continue their operations.
Peter from Pewaukee called and couldn't stay with us, but Tyler, you alluded to this a bit. Peter says that every farm has, quote, unproductive land, and developers should focus on building there. It would be more expensive and limit the number of houses they can build. What do you see with those dynamics?
That fits right in with this idea, I think, about smart growth, smart planning, as we think about housing development, as we think about energy development. So on the energy side, you know, we absolutely need more clean, renewable energy, things like wind and solar, but citing that in a smart way, thinking about, you know, solar, for example, putting that on those more marginal areas or maybe degraded lands that aren't as quite as productive is a great way where we can preserve our highest quality agricultural land, integrate it with some of these other things, with housing development and energy development on the landscape, and do it in a complementary way. So I think the caller's probably right on the mark with where things really need to go.
Yeah, no, I wonder if you could take us inside how you worked on this data. How did you compile data to predict, you know, farmland use between 2016 and 2040? What is that process like?
It's a kind of geospatial modeling. So we put together several indicators like population growth and some geospatial indicators of urban development like road networks, existing land available for urban development, and land values, and the nighttime line information, and also the historical urban land use conversion, like from non-urban to urban. So we basically combine all those together into a machine learning model, mm-hmm. and trying to predict where the potential urban development will occur in the future. So basically, we get the information from 2001 to 2016 and predict the future urban development based on many indicators, geospatial indicators, like socioeconomic indicators and existing land use.
You keep layering and layering these indicators on to be able to really see what is happening in a granular way across the country.
Yes. Yeah, correct.
Let's take another call now. Jeff is with us from Delafield. Jeff, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Yes, good morning. My comment is I think our state government can be our own worst enemy. We're seeing restrictions on how municipalities can raise revenue. In our case, in Delafield, a state law a few years ago banned the use of hotel tax revenue in the municipal general budget, and it's forcing the municipality to pursue more and more development, which of course then the costs go up and it becomes a vicious circle. But it seems like our state government is encouraging this development rather than looking for ways to control it, if you will. And it's policies are being counterproductive. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. Tyler, how should local governments approach land use planning and policy?
Well, Jeff, it's an important point. Policy really plays into it. And I think Wisconsin is actually, you know, a leader on a lot of the policy sides, thinking about farmland preservation. And there's a lot of local and county policies that are enabled at the state level, specifically on the agricultural side of things. So DATCAP, the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, has some farmland preservation programs to try to help local governments and counties band together to form agricultural enterprise areas and some farmland preservation zones. But the caller hits the nail on the head in that it's a big holistic picture, and you know, funding is always an issue, and how we prioritize our policies and what we want our landscapes and development to look like is ultimately the end question. So I'd just encourage folks to dig in, get involved in their local, you know, their local planning boards, their town boards, their county zoning boards, whatever it might be, to if this is something you care about and are passionate about, to participate in that process, because often just a few folks can help guide that and stand up and prioritize our open spaces, our agricultural lands, and really share that as a priority if it's something we want to prioritize.
Talking about threats to farmland with UW-Madison researchers Tyler Lark and Jan O'Shea, you can join in the conversation about what you see in your community, what is being developed and why, what is up for sale and what happens to that land. 800-642-1234. Tyler, you mentioned solar energy and the Biden administration seeking to eliminate fossil fuels from electric power. We've seen all of these solar farms coming online, other renewable energy sources, of course, as well. And that could mean converting more farmland. How might this push affect agricultural land in the future?
So we definitely need more clean, renewable energy, things like solar. I think we just want to be thoughtful about how we use our land to support that energy development. So in the case of farmland, doing things like maximizing solar siting on disturbed or contaminated or marginal lands or on rooftops, right? Places that are already paved over. Let's utilize those to the best extent and try to minimize the conversion of our best agricultural lands, or explore this kind of an emerging concept known as agrivoltaic. So essentially integrating in a dual use, both solar and agricultural production, which looks like it would have a lot of potential, and that could bring some additional economic diversification to farms. And so, you know, solar, I think, is an absolute opportunity for our state, for our agricultural producers, and just working to encourage that and doing it in a smart way, just like all this development and siting, is really what needs to happen.
UW-Madison scientists from the Center for Sustainability and the Global Environment. Tyler Lark there, Jan O'Shea, stay with us. They contributed mapping expertise in this new report on how farmland is being swallowed up by development and the implications that look out to 2040. Join in on policy actions. Join in on solutions you see to smart growth. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about America's farmlands rapidly disappearing and Wisconsin and all states at this crossroads as to what land stays in egg production. A new report from American Farmland Trust, it reveals that between 2016 and 2040, more than 515,000 acres of Wisconsin's farmland will be paved over, will be fragmented, or converted. What does that mean for your community? Join in on policy actions, next steps, 800-642-1234. UW-Madison scientists who worked on the report, Tyler Lark and Jan O'Shea, they stay with us. Let's bring on another caller. Rob is with us from Oregon. Rob, hi. What's on your mind?
Hello. What's on my mind is how we can fix this. It has to do with the design that the developers are using. They want to take the lowest hanging fruit and land that's taken generations to get flat, good, and rocks off of it so that it can be ag land. That's where the developers want to go because it's the easiest and the cheapest for them. On every farm, somebody else mentioned it, there is what's called unproductive land. So there's land available. If we just tell them you can't take the easiest for you, which is the flat, well-developed for agriculture land. So it's zoning, and it's also take a look at how much the developers spend at state venues where they're lobbying to keep the easy design for them, but they have to move to a more difficult design for them, which would be using just the unproductive land, not putting 80 houses in at a time, but putting 5 to 10, and then move to another place. This is, we're up against the money of the developers who want to take the easiest land for them to develop.
Rob,
well, if they do, then all the people who are moving in will eventually not have any food. You know, we need farming.
Rob, thank you. Let's get Tyler to respond. Tyler, go ahead.
Sounds like he's given a lot of thought to us, and I think it brings up some really good points, right? And it's a challenging thing to do to sort of, you know, people want to grab that lowest hanging fruit. And when we do that, we see we have really large trade-offs for the environment and for our agricultural production. And so getting right to that point of having strong policies in place to help guide this development to where we as society know we need to get it is an important step in moving in that direction.
Rob, thank you. Jack now in Madison. Jack, go ahead.
Hi there. I'm not sure how many more callers have brought this point up, but, you know, hearing about how much land, you know, Wisconsin has in farmland to begin with, and what a strong part of our state's, you know, social and economic and agricultural tradition farming is, I think would be nice to, if there were some way in which, you know, the government was able to give more money to farms, which it should be doing, but, you know, failing that scenario, if there were a way to restore as much farmland to its original habitat as possible and kind of bring back the prairies and forests, you know, take other measures like that, especially in light of the impending climate crisis and how much better off we'll be if we have more natural land to absorb some of the harmful effects that could come our way. And so I wondered what initiatives, you know, the state and especially the DNR are taking, like if they're able to acquire enough farmland and they can convert it back into something more natural if we're not able to keep the farms as they were.
Jack, thank you for this. And Yano, this reminds me of where we started our conversation, how you mentioned that once the conversion happens, it's so hard to go back. Any thoughts here on what Jack has to say?
Yeah, it's based on our historical observation, like back from 1980s, it's like if a farmland is converted to urban, it's very unlikely to convert it back to farmland because usually the farmland's kind of perfect surface, right? For food production or some other purposes, farming purposes. But if it is converted to like to impervious surface like roads and the residential area, there were a lot of productivity. So yeah, it's very difficult. And in Wisconsin, actually, it's protecting farmland from urban development is kind of, we need efforts from not just the local government, but also the state government, local government, also the federal policies. We need cooperation between them. And in Wisconsin, actually, the response to policies is actually ranking the median. So it's not the highest policy response, just a ranking the median. But in Wisconsin, we have high threat to agriculture land. So we can do a lot of work in Wisconsin to protect the land. And for the Dane County, actually, like almost like 60% of the 70%, over 70% of our Dane County's conversion is happen on a very high productive farmland.
Over 70% of Dane County's conversion of this farmland is highly productive farmland.
Yes.
So
yes.
We really need to think about what we're trading off here.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Wow. Let's go to Tim in Hollandale. Tim, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I don't think we should be touching the set-away farmland. We have to have stuff for wildlife to live in, which we're losing rapidly. We have people that can work from home, and we have buildings that can be vacated. People don't need to go to work. They don't have to, and it would be helping the planet, pulling some of the carbon off. So repurpose some of this stuff.
Tim is saying we have all this open real estate now in city centers and elsewhere, Tyler. Can't we repurpose it into places for people to live?
Yes, we can. I think that's a really good suggestion and one of the key recommendations of where we need to go moving forward. Looking at developers and encouraging, choosing to restore, renew, or redevelop existing spaces, basically investing in and revitalizing our current urban spaces, our current urban cores, and building compact communities is a really a great solution and something that, I think really has no downsides. And on the natural areas side of it, both the current caller and the previous one, I think those things need to come hand in hand too. So restoration and protection of our natural areas, our remaining, areas of nature and open space, that has to happen at the same time as we continue to protect and conserve our agricultural lands so that this, continued development pressure doesn't cascade down where we lose our best ag land and then we need to expand into further natural areas. It's really, we want to start up as far upstream as possible, slow this inefficient sprawl and growth that we're seeing, and then at the same time, protect our current ag lands and our existing remaining natural areas.
Let's bring in Leslie in Rhinelander with thoughts. Leslie, hi.
Hi. So I had to force to sell a small farm I had down in Tennessee because of all the development. And I was in a really, really rural area. They just cut everything down. So it's the same like with forests, and then the farms are selling off. They do have something in Tennessee called a green belt. If you own over 15 acres of land, there's an incentive then to get a tax break, a big tax break on the value of your land. And I don't know if Wisconsin's got that or not. But the other big issue, I work with farmers all over the world, and here in the States, is the issue between, because it's hard work. It's 24/7, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Retired farmers, right? And young people who want to farm. And it's still a huge issue because a lot of the land, some of it's, owned by some of the largest landowners across the United States. And they have, including Bill Gates, I'm not taking politics, I'm talking about an individual here, right, who owns the largest owner of farmland in the U.S. This is factual, okay?
And Leslie, because we're running out of time, we need to stop there. And Tyler, just some last thoughts when we think about this conversion. What should we bear in mind?
Anything we can do, I think, as all the callers have sort of alluded to slow this, to help guide it into more smart development, principle-based method, looking at compact development and keeping our farms economically viable and healthy. Any way we can do that is not only going to help, but it's incredibly important and much needed. And so, not sitting back and waiting another 20 years until 2040 and we see, oh my gosh, we've just lost 10% of our ag land in the state. But taking action now to really proactively plan and try to achieve that future that we want to see, I think is where we need to go.
Tyler Lark and Jan O'Shea, thank you so much for joining us. They are UW-Madison researchers at the Center for Sustainability in the Global Environment. We have a link to the American Farmland Trust report called Farms Under Threat 2040. It's at wpr.org/mornings. This is The Morning Show.